Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater podcast for the week of May 2nd, 2010. Sitting right across from me is the very dapper Will Hines.
And across from me is the well-appointed John Frusciante.
And we're going to talk to you about some things going on at the theater, and we also have a very special interview and discussion with the legendary Billy Merritt.
Billy Merritt, yes, is on, so we're very excited about that interview. But first, John, let's talk about these cool shows we have.
Okay, why don't you talk about the show that's happening
tonight? Tonight at 9:30 is the show Iron Man 2, Premiere Party at Avengers Mansion. This is a show Brian Berebi and I are putting on.
Yeah.
Brian's going to be Stan Lee. I am Iron Man.
Ridiculous.
The real Iron Man.
I can't wait to see you decked out as Iron Man.
Yeah, it's going to be ridiculous. I actually have to go get the costume after we're done recording this. But and it's supposed to be the premiere party at Avengers Mansion, so a lot of superhero and movie-related guests will stop by to help celebrate the premiere of the movie. We're not showing the movie.
Right.
Some people have called the theater thinking we're showing the movie. No, this is just the Avengers Mansion premiere party.
And so, this is like the premiere party, like after the showing of the movie
somewhere.
Yeah, this
somewhere. Would be like a Vanity Fair Oscar party.
Right, if everybody went over to Stan Lee's place. And
yeah. So Brian will be Stan Lee, and I'll be Iron Man. And we have this is a world where I am the real Iron Man, and Robert Downey Jr. plays me in the movie.
Right. And you never leave your costume.
No.
Or you never leave
my
your
Iron
suit.
Man is always in the suit.
Right.
Yep.
Hilarious.
So that's tonight at 9:30. Check it out.
Okay. This Wednesday and Thursday, we have a really cool special thing happening. Anthony Jeselnik is recording his first comedy album at the theater.
Yeah.
Anthony Jeselnik is a great stand-up comedian. He's known all around New York City, kind of dark and hilarious.
Yeah, very very dark and very severe.
Yeah.
Awesome jokes. Just like some stand-ups are more story-oriented. Anthony does do that, but just fantastic jokes.
Yeah.
I mean that in the highest complimentary sense. And he writes for Fallon.
He was a writer
He was the original monologue guy for Fallon.
Yeah.
Right.
And now he's recording his first comedy CD. He's doing it over two nights here at the theater. So you can come by and try to have your laugh heard distinctly on the recording of a CD. That's Wednesday and Thursday at 8 o'clock.
That'll be a great show for sure.
Yeah.
We'll see Friday at 6:30, John. I see Landline TV and Mad present Hello, Dum Dum.
Yeah, so Landline TV developed an original web series with Mad, which is Marcy, Mackenzie, Abra, and Darcy.
Right.
They're a great improv group that I'm sure you've probably seen.
Yes.
And they tapped Mad to develop a web series around.
Yeah.
And so they're premiering a couple of episodes from this web series live at the theater.
Mad is like an indie phenom.
Yes.
They have their show Gentrified Brooklyn Friday Nights, which they do with Sidecar.
Yep.
Our very first guest in this podcast was Justin.
That's right.
Of Sidecar. And
the Lost Podcast.
That's one of our we went up a month and a half after we recorded it.
That's right.
And but Mad is a hilarious, weird, super fun improv group. They're all hilarious.
Yeah,
Mackenzie,
high energy.
Abra, and Darcy are just like all like premier improvisers.
Yeah.
So they're a great group. And Landline TV is they're a hit on the internet.
Yeah, they're a powerhouse.
They make hits.
Yeah.
Powerhouse. Viral hit. They're making stuff.
They're like they would be if making comedy videos was like songwriting, they'd be like in the Brill Building, like churning out.
Right.
Hits.
They're on the floor just writing Calendar Girl and Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
That's right.
I second that emotion.
Yeah.
Whatever. I can't fill in the specifics.
That's all right.
You do it later. It's 6:30 Friday. Those two awesome groups are teaming up to do a show about their web series.
That's right. And just want to quickly mention, it's sold out, but you might be able to get in by standby, and it's just awesome that it's happening. There's a secret Donald Glover show. Obviously, it's not really secret, but Donald Glover, who you all know from Derek and NBC's Community, of course, is coming back to New York to do a stand-up show. He's going to just try out some new stand-up.
He was writing for 30 Rock, quit to focus on his stand-up, got hired to act in Community because he wasn't successful enough.
Right.
But he loves stand-up, and he's been working a lot at it.
Also, constantly recording music, has a few albums
because
out.
He wants to make us feel like shit in every arena in terms of being successful.
Absolutely.
But, that show will be great this Friday at 7:30. It's sold out, but the standby line, probably some of that
definitely.
Will be in, so,
yeah.
Those are all, and then we got Saturday at midnight, World Fire Teen Ministries Lock-In.
Yeah. This is another kind of similar bit show, similar to the Iron Man show and shows like that we've done in the past. The premise is that it's a lock-in, like, at a church or a ministry, and it's like this World Fire Teen Ministry accepts all different kinds of religions.
Yes.
And,
World Fire, it's an acronym, F-I-R-E.
That's
I don't know
right.
What it stands for, but it looks like some crazy, like, youth outreach.
Yeah.
Let's get psyched about Jesus group.
That's exactly what it
yeah.
is. And so Chris Wilkes put the show together. He's a Mod Team writer, hilarious guy. And so you're going to see a bunch of people expounding upon their religious beliefs in character, of course.
But a lot of these bit shows this year.
Yeah.
A lot of this is sort of a new thing that the UCB Theater is sort of pushing a bunch of, right?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to get a bunch of people on stage showing off their stuff and, you know, writing bits, coming up with fun ideas.
The community's big enough. There's so many good people
yeah.
that this is a good way to have a lot of them in a short show
yeah.
strut their stuff.
And it's cool because we've lost some of those. I talked about this on a couple of message boards, but we've lost some of our open mic shows to just the furious busyness of our schedule.
Yeah,
you know?
So we're trying to have something where you can see a lot of different
Yeah, and this is good for people who, you know, don't normally have... It just gives people more opportunity to get on stage.
Yeah.
And that's what we're always trying to do is give people as much opportunity as we can to get them up on stage.
Well, that just sounds like the best thing ever.
Yeah, I concur. I concur.
Okay, well, those are good shows this week, so... check those out if you are so inclined.
That's right.
And stick around because we will be right back after a perhaps new song that you will email me.
I'm going to send you one.
Okay.
I did it last week. I made good on the promise.
You
well,
did,
you so had to pester me a little bit.
Yes,
but
we'll get another
I've
new
already,
song this week.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to an awesome interview with Billy Merritt.
Mm-hmm. Great. Here we go.
Stick around. And goodbye.
Bye.
And now. We're back, and this week our special guest from Los Angeles is William Billy Merritt. Welcome, Billy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Hey, Billy.
Hi. How are you, John?
Great.
Well, I'm excited to be on the radio.
Yeah, it's not a radio. It's a podcast. We're recording it now, and we'll put it on the internet.
It's so it's live going out to the...
Nope, it's not live. It's
no, not at all.
It's a file that we record, and...
Yeah, recorded a few days in advance.
Is this just something I'm doing in your room?
This is kind of, yeah, that's closer to what the reality is.
That shouldn't
is.
Delegitimize the fact that you're in our bedroom
okay.
right
well,
now, though.
I'm not going to promote anything then.
Okay, great. So Billy, of course, is a longtime performer and teacher at the UCB. He was a founding member of the seminal improv group The Swarm. He started 10 million shows and forms and practice. At one point was coaching every single Herald team and practice group at the UCB Theater in New York. I think that's not an exaggeration.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
I did a bit much. I did more than I should have.
When you quit your bartending job and supported yourself with coaching, it was
yeah.
hilarious how many groups you were coaching there for a while.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even remember. It was just
it was
a haze
absurd.
Of coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was coaching in my sleep.
Yeah. Taught all the upper... And at some point, was teaching the upper-level classes, running what would become the 600 performance-level classes,
right.
coaching everybody on the Swarm. We were sick of you, frankly. There was a
yeah,
lot. There was
yeah,
a,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
When you left, it was time for you to go.
Yeah. What was amazing is what I know now compared to what I knew then. I knew nothing back then.
Oh, yeah.
I was pretty much saying the same thing over and over.
Well, what's the difference between what you know now and what you know then?
Just more adverbs, really.
Yeah.
Just,
you know. Oh, it's not knowledge. It's just
how you
means
say
of
it.
Communication.
It's all pretty much the same thing.
And, right now, Billy, you're on the Smokes at UCBLA.
The Smokes
is your regular performance team.
Yeah. We perform. We have the kick-ass slot, Monday, 7 p.m.
Yeah, the hottest slot of the week.
It's the L.A. We're the hottest Monday, 7 p.m. show in L.A. There's a lot of old New Yorkers. Some people from Chicago are on the team, too.
Yeah, you got Joe Wingert's there, Susanna Beckett. And then
yeah.
Jim Woods is an L.A. guy.
Jim Woods.
Ryan Gallivan is an L.A.
Ryan
guy.
Ryan Gallivan. Eugene Cordero just joined us.
All right.
Chris Kula adds
sure,
his sultry
the
tones.
The deep, bassy voice of Chris
yeah,
Kula.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is a lot of New York expats.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, oh, the table squeaked.
It's okay. The table's going to squeak.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
The technical limitations of this podcast are formidable.
I'm amazed, by the way, how many cats you have in here.
Yeah, I have too many cats.
I don't understand.
It doesn't, yeah.
It's a talisman for Will. It's like
yeah.
A
you know, good luck kind of
it's
thing.
It's
weird.
And you do the Smokes. What else do you, are you in any other regular
soundtrack every Friday night.
Oh, I didn't know you were doing that.
9:30, yeah. I do a little soundtrack, a little boogie improv.
Friday night.
Yeah. Do ASCAT every other week or so.
Heard of it?
Yeah, it's a decent show.
Yeah.
And then what else do? I coach 40 groups.
How many years have you been out? When did you go out to L.A.? When did you move out there?
I think it's been like 2.5 years. It was June. Wow. Oh, you know, I think we're hitting a 3-year mark.
Oh, wow.
Wow, it has been a while. I noticed that because I recognize half the people now, or if not more or less.
Yeah, yeah. The changeover is amazingly fast. Although if you were here, I mean, you've been here for 2 weeks. If you were here for one more week, you would be caught up.
Yeah.
Like it also is, if you watched Herald Night, I think for 2 weeks in a row.
You'd know everybody.
And you have coached like 4 or 5 sessions.
Since I've been here.
Yeah. You're almost back at your pace.
Yeah, I had a week off between shoots, so I said, I'll just coach anybody I can, and apparently they all said yes.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, everybody's hungry for that Billy Merritt knowledge.
Yeah, I know. I'm running out of adverbs and adjectives of what to do.
So how did you get started in improv? What brought you to improvisation?
The original story was food. I was looking for a place to eat at college.
Right.
And I confused the cafeteria with the theater wing. literally, walked in thinking, looking for food, and I ended up painting the set for Rags.
Same day.
And that's where I met Michael Delaney, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
My first vision of Michael Delaney was him walking across the stage with a ball of socks, looking around, going, hey, you got any pot?
Like, neither of you have changed. You're both exactly the same.
Pretty, he still has those same socks. Yeah. He's still walking around looking for those socks. I think we were doing theater there, and we kind of both were big SCTV nerds.
Right.
And we just started watching a lot of SCTV together, then got on stage and tried it out down in West Palm, then moved up to New York and worked our way up through there.
Now that's the quick version, but I want to highlight a couple of things. Okay. Weren't you once on a group in Florida called Comedy Squad?
All right, easy. Yeah, that was our first team. We were called the Troop with No Name was our cool name.
Yeah, that's too cool.
To start with.
I prefer to think of you as Comedy Squad.
The Comedy Squad. And then my girlfriend on the team at the time insisted and got us all laminated little things that said Comedy Squad with a little badge.
Oh, God.
And at the end of the show, we go, we're the Comedy Squad, flip out our badges and go, just the laughs, ma'am.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
And you know what? It's time to bring that back. I really would like to see all the Herald teams have a saying or
yeah,
something.
That's been the gist of your workshops this week, right?
Yes, man.
Focusing on taglines and props.
What is your tagline and what kind of thing are you going to show the audience if you are?
So what, you guys all moved up to New York together. What was the impetus behind that, and why New York, not LA, or somewhere else?
I think it started, you know what? I think because we didn't know whether to go to Chicago or New York.
Mm-hmm.
And then Delaney's girlfriend, who was about to be his wife, Linda, moved up first because she got a scholarship at Neighborhood Playhouse.
Okay.
So she got an apartment. We went, well, we're going to stay there for free. So it was literally our cheapest and best option.
Okay.
And we knew other people in New York at that time.
Okay.
And we also, there was a improv theater.
The National Improv Theater.
National Improv Theater, which I think this is 92, 93 when we moved up or something like that.
Yeah.
But they were the big theater in, from what we were told, they were the big theater in New York in the 80s. Like all during the big stand-up boom, a lot of those stand-ups took classes there because they had a big poster of all like, Jerry Seinfeld took classes here. Rita Redner took classes here.
Okay, right.
Giovanni Ribisi.
I think I saw a show. I lived in Stanford, really? Connecticut, and a friend of mine from college was like, oh, you would like this, and brought me to New York to watch the National Improv Theater.
What did
show.
You think of it? What did you
I remember,
see?
I mean, I had never seen improv of any kind, and I loved it. It was there was a piano player. Before the show started, you would yell at a composer, and he would play in that style.
Exactly, yeah.
And then I remember there was like games. It was sort of like first and last, like you would shout out the first line of dialogue and the last line of dialogue,
you
could get from one to
there
the
were,
other.
You know, there were a
and I definitely remember Tamara Wilcox. Is that
Tamara,
her name?
Tamara Wilcox.
Yeah, I remember her.
She was a member of the committee in San Francisco and moved to New York and brought what she knew. So we did a version of something called a Herald there, which we would call, in our world, the montage, I guess, or something along those lines. Kind of focusing on not short, quick, competitive games, but scenes that have little game edges on them. So I call it mid-form.
Yeah, medium full, form. Yeah. Like some, there's some structure to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a true long form.
And we did our group, Lost Footage.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Comedy Squad. You'll love Lost Footage.
Lost Footage, though, is a real name.
That's a real
name. We have that picture floating around.
Yeah, it's in my mailbox.
Really?
You should probably add it to the Herald team wall.
Oh, you don't have
it's not technically a Herald team.
Well, that's why they're not on the wall. They're not technically a Herald team.
Well, you know, you could put it somewhere.
But you're all in black turtlenecks. Yeah. It looks
doesn't
hilarious.
Need to hang out in your mailbox.
Yeah, it was you, Billy, Linda, Bobby Kennedy, right?
Blumenfeld.
Blumenfeld, and we had some classic mid-form improvs. 1-4, 4-1. You ever do that?
Yeah.
Like starts with familiar. One player.
Oh, yeah.
Two player scene, yeah. Three player scene, four player scene, yep. Back to three, yeah. Back to one. Yep. Classic mid-form.
Classic play.
Yeah.
And then, what was it like when the UCB arrived? How did you guys end up? Because that became the Swarm, which was the biggest group of the theater.
Yeah, I think there was a couple groups between the Swarm
and
Lost Footage. Lost Footage was our, like all the Florida guys, plus we met Bobby in New York and that kind of crew. And we
what's
had that
Bobby's last
going.
Name?
Kennedy. Right?
Bobby Kennedy, but his...
Oh, Bobby Curious.
Curious is his improv name.
Because Bobby Kennedy wasn't ridiculous enough. That he was named after.
Yeah, well, I think he was Kennedy. Tired of all the jokes, so he... I thought he'd have a normal name like Bobby Curry. How did we meet?
How'd you hear? Because you guys were already established with an established theater, and now these like upstarts come from Chicago saying they know the truth.
Well, they didn't say it that way. you know, we were hungry for it because we knew about I.O. and That Herald. And before they came, there were a couple other people from Chicago that came that we took workshops that turned out were... false.
Okay,
it's
yeah.
like you don't know what you're doing kind
right.
of thing.
Uh-huh.
So we're a little frustrated about it. And I just remember my very first meeting was with Besser. And it was me and Dave Blumenfeld. We took some sort of workshop that Cecilia Bresic set up in some office somewhere. And here comes this young punk kid called Besser with the he looked like James Dean.
I've always thought Besser was a James Dean dead ringer.
But you know how a lot of this is the big thing with improv, especially community local improvs, you just think your shit is the best.
Right.
And
you get
anytime
very,
somebody says something different,
you're very myopic to your own scene. Yeah. You're like, we're doing it and everything else is bullshit.
Yeah, you don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah, I still think is that not right?
That's the UCB way. That's
right.
But I think one of the first things Dave and I did a scene, was okay, and Besser said, you guys are improvising with blinders on, and I said, what the, you son of a...
Who are you?
How dare
and then,
you?
It took me 24 hours to realize he's right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
because how he did, he literally described what the pattern game,
and
the flower pattern, and this and that,
yeah.
and it's like, it really took that workshop, plus maybe a couple more for me to get that, my improv's the best kind of feeling out of the way, and like really... I accept this because you know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm sorry, I cussed. We're live on the air. I'm so sorry.
No, we're
really
not
live in the air.
And it's okay
show.
That you swear.
You can swear as much as you want.
That's totally fine.
To say.
Okay.
Not pushing any boundaries. Sorry. Yeah.
Fuck fart.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
That's a new one and weird, but not wrong for the medium.
That's not weird. You can do it right.
So how did it go from there? So you do take a couple workshops.
Yeah.
They had probably just moved here and were like doing their Ask Cat show Sunday nights.
Yeah, we were doing our Lost Footage show in Michael Delaney's herbal medicine doctor, Dr. Ken Kobayashi.
Yes.
He had a whole giant basement that we put the floor in. We set up a little mini stage, and it was called the Chambre des Anges.
Yes.
Chamber of Angels.
Right.
Chamber of Angels.
Good.
Okay.
We did our little show there, I think, on Friday nights for like 5 to 8 people.
Okay.
But we also were teaching it, and I think we got each and every one of them to come in. Ian, I don't know if we had Walsh. I don't remember at that time. But I remember Amy came in a couple times.
Yeah.
Amy coached another team. I mean, once they started bringing in people, we started mixing and matching.
Okay.
And that's when another group called Naked Apartment came to life.
Okay, I've heard of that.
I think that was me and Dave. Katie Roberts, who became a member of the Swarm. Bill Cott was on for like one day. who else is on it? Joanne Morrison, Karen Herr. I don't remember. Well, the names are names.
they really are.
But we basically, it was like a little workshop space, so we kept having people in there, and it's like each one of these workshops was amazing. I still remember this day Ian Roberts was doing some, you know how when Ian teaches a workshop or a class, he has to get up and do a scene. So, takes off his shirts and gets on stage or something like that. I got to do a scene.
Yeah.
So he started doing a scene. It was low beams, and he did some sort of thing like that, and he dislocated his finger in the middle of the scene and just went, oh, he dislocated my finger and stayed in the scene. And we're just going, that must be part of the scene. And he finished it. Then he went like that. It was like,
oh my God.
Wow.
Wow. That's commitment.
Yeah. It's like, I would not do that. I would stop everything.
Oh yeah.
I'd
be crying instantly. Yeah. Show's over.
Yeah. So, I mean, with each workshop, it just got more and more, this is how we want to play. You know, it just got better and better.
Because simultaneously they were forming what they were doing. I mean, they were expanding their workshops.
Yeah.
Because they were just renting space at Solo Arts probably at
that
point.
Yeah, that was...
Maybe not even.
It was just, they were just getting that space at Solo Arts. They were trying a couple different places. They were still doing Herald versions or long forms, and they were just getting Ask Cat started at a bar called Rebar or somewhere like that. I remember that was like the first time I saw
Ask Cat. Yeah, 8th Avenue and 16th Street. Remember that.
And those shows were really, that was amazing.
That's where Luna Lounge, the stand-up show, before was at Luna Lounge, was at Rebar.
Yes.
Those guys all moved down to Luna Lounge.
Yes.
And then, like, there was still sort of a residual leftover comedy scene at Rebar.
Yes, yes.
I remember, like, second-level alternative stand-ups were doing shows there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People were, like, writing for The Daily Show now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're doing, like, stand-up at Rebar in the mid-90s, and UCB was doing, would show up and do stuff.
Exactly, exactly. I saw in those Ass Cats, Stephen Colbert would sit in with them, and Andy Richter, and Robert Schmeigel would hang out. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. All that. So, oh, those were the days. Those were the days.
Yeah. So so you start to meet these people and you start to work with different groups, and eventually those groups kind of gel into the Swarm?
Yeah.
Or is that the origin story?
From what I understand at that time, there was a Lost Footage. There was a group called Hammerheads.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other groups, but those are kind of like the main two groups that were like of same...
But if what does that mean? Like, where would these groups perform?
Well, we would like start putting shows together. Certain people would put together little grab ass shows. Can I say grab ass?
Yes, not even anywhere near fuck fart.
Yeah, you can. I think you can say grab ass on AM radio. That one you cannot say on AM radio.
People would put together shows. There's a name from the past, Morty Lahasky. At a little group called Pop 7.
I don't know.
And they would, you know, say they would put up just kind of like the indie shows now. That's what they had there.
Okay.
Lost Footage would play. Another group called Hammerheads would play. And they were, Lost Footage was based out of National Improv Theater. They were based out of Chicago
City Limits. Sure, okay.
And that was Sean, Andy Daly. I think Secunda was on that. Paul Scheer.
Right.
Missing people. I know other people. Dan Telfer, I think, was on that.
John Telfer.
Cameron Telfer.
Who?
John Cameron Telfer.
Whatever. I don't know.
Probably, yeah. That was the CCL guys.
Your mom.
My mother was not
team.
Involved in CCL.
Your mom was there.
I don't think.
Your mom was a big player.
I don't think she was involved in the
mom.
Your
mom did short form.
Big insult. What a weird insult. Calling you out.
The nerdiest form of snaps.
So as we're doing shows together, I think it was Delaney. I had to have been Delaney and, was it Secunda? Those two were putting... You know, let's get some of our guys and some of your guys, and let's put together a team.
I thought that Amy was involved somehow.
Amy was the one that wanted to coach it. She wanted to coach it. So they wanted to put together one sort of team amongst those people who are really interested in learning. At that time, it wasn't a Herald. It was a new form, if I remember correctly. It was a DJ-type form where you'd sample scenes from here to there.
Okay,
and
yeah.
You'd mix the two things together.
DJing.
Yeah.
Kind of being a new thing, and like this is the mid-90s,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So DJ's exploding into like the main...
It's
sort of a cool...
Amy gave us all cassette tapes of great rap music.
Yeah,
Wu-Tang
Clan. Yes.
A lot of Wu-Tang.
Yeah, big fans of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah. Yeah. We were horrible in that form. We were the whitest team of all, but we merged together and became a team. And we got our name because of that form. Because she was always describing, there's one moment in the scene where the scene would freeze because somebody in the back wall would yell out, "Let's break it down." And we'd come there.
Oh, my God, from Comedy Squad to Let's Break It Down.
Yeah. You'd see, you just start describing, paint the person and picture really quick in the scene, then get out of there. And Amy was always saying, you need to swarm around. You need to swarm. You need to get that. And apparently that was the only thing in the form we could do right.
Yeah.
And as we were coming down with names, we were at Duke's Barbecue. And we had three choices for names. One was a swarm.
Okay.
Four choices. One was Amy's Pants. And Amy said, no, don't call it that, ever. El Sabor, because that was the name of the hot sauce on the table. And Andy Daly had some bizarre one. I still have the Five Conundrums of Dr. Vang or something like that, which I still think is a great name.
Yeah, pretty great.
Yeah.
And the Swarm.
Is the Swarm the group that Amy said she would coach you if you paid $100 a session? Or is that, am I thinking of Ice Nine? It might be.
Yeah.
She made them promise to... There's some story where Amy made a group promise to pay some amount, but then just did it for a pack of cigarettes.
Right, because they agreed to it. That's how she knew they were
into it. She wanted to know they were into it.
Are you kidding? Was Secunda in our group? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Come on. We got the best deal possible. and yeah, Amy got us going. I mean, because of Amy, we wouldn't have the group. But the development of the group really has just as much to do with Armando was our next coach.
Yeah.
Really got us going into that Herald team format. And then Kevin Mullaney after that.
Right.
Was awesome. We made him cry, but he was awesome.
Made him cry how?
Huh?
How did you make him cry?
We just would not do what he told us to do.
So what's the difference between the way Lost Footage would play and the way the Swarm would play? Like, how did, because it was a lot of overlap of people.
Yeah.
Or maybe this is the question. Probably neither of these are answerable. Mm-hmm. Okay. What you guys are one of the few groups at that time who
Moose Nipple.
Okay, that's a good, and okay. You can say it, but it's not relevant to what's being talked about now.
Sure.
You guys at that time, as senior group who had training outside of the UCB theater,
yeah.
Like most of the people who performed, well, I guess at that time, most of the people who performed had some training outside of the theater. But mm-hmm. You guys had like major, long-time established teaching in a structured way and then came here and became like the big guys here.
Well, it didn't start that way. Obviously, it wasn't that way right away. There was always room for insecurity for the groups to, you know, because we're learning game, we're learning a different style and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while. I always think there was a certain moment when we clicked and became a group. We were not good at first. I didn't feel good at first. I think a lot of us were feeling a little weird. We were doing a Herald night at Solo Arts before we were renting that whole place. It was just Thursday night Herald night where we just rent that space because Friday was nude gay disco night or something
right.
The tarps out and the show was running late because everybody was doing crazy openings or something like that, and we were the last group.
Okay.
And I remember Besser coming around and just kind of just saying, you guys, you only have 15 minutes. Can you pull off a Herald in 15 minutes? And it's like, yes, we can. You'll see.
Yeah.
And obviously that's half the time. We were doing 45-minute Heralds or something like that. And to me, that's when it clicked. That's when the egos were aside, if we had egos, and we just scenes fell on top of each other a little bit more.
Yeah.
And we got that swarming attitude.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that was a defining moment. I would like to see what other swarm people felt were defining moments.
Yeah.
Or if there were any yet. I don't know.
You guys are pretty quickly the best team, I think, though, because I was starting to see shows at Solo Arts just from, like, I just lived in New York and would look at, like, New York press, what the comedy shows were.
Well, I think the difference is we could individually put on great scenes and do great. We were all good performers.
Yeah.
But we weren't a UCB gameplay team.
Yeah.
You know, it took a while to become a team. I think we could always do an entertaining show. Everybody on that group knew how to entertain, but we didn't know how to do the improv the way we wanted to.
You're definitely
to do
the most seasoned people. Of the groups that were performing under the UCB banner, I mean, other than the UCB themselves.
Yeah.
It was clear that you guys, like, had presence on stage and experience.
Oh, good times.
I was not, I didn't see any of those shows. But when I first started coming around to the theater, one of the shows that I saw and would then go see every week was the Slow Waltz show.
Oh, Slow Waltz were on Rage Mountain.
Yeah.
We had a big fight. It was going to be Slow Waltz. Obviously, it was between Secunda and Daly, the great Andy battles. Should it be Slow Waltz around Rage Mountain or Slow Waltz around Rickety Mountain?
Daly was
hours of
purely, obviously, picking Rickety.
Yes,
sure. Yeah.
Daly's a Rickety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I mean, we could have our, you know, I think that was really helped us because we weren't afraid not to fight, but to go, no, I think it should be this or I should be this. And maybe sometimes we wouldn't move forward, but we would really get our feelings out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Enough that we respect each other a little bit more on stage, you know.
And that's let us important go a little bit to further. Be able to, get your feelings out and have those kind of discussions without making them like, fuck you, you're an asshole, you know.
And
if it gets to that point, still being able to, like, you know, hug
a couple
and whatever.
Times Delaney would cry and go,
sure.
<in his room."
laughs> So the Swarm became a pretty special group to the people on the end of the theater. How long in it? When did it become something important to you? When did you guys know, this is something good, this is something that we should, like, work at and take care of? Or did you never, was it just sort of like something you just did and it just was what it was?
I mean, there are different levels of that. You know, when we first got up, like I said, that 15-minute Herald to me made, like, all right, we're a team. I really want to do this. Then we basically put up Slow Waltz. Once that show got going, that's when it became, this is a show. I mean,
but even before Slow Waltz, you guys were like the premier Herald team. You would do cage matches and you would do Herald in the Dark. You were the first team that I saw do Herald in the Dark.
Yeah.
That was at Solo Arts.
I remember that.
And then
well, I was in it, so of course I remember.
I remember. Yeah, you did a scene where you were the devil calling for the head of Tom Conti.
Yes, to this day, I still, I want to repeat that. Bring me the head of Tom Conti.
Yes.
I have no idea.
There was another scene where Andy Daly was a guy who walked into a donut shop and demanded a bigger donut because he was a taller dude. He was mad that he got the same size donut as everybody.
That's clear. That's just pure philosophy right there. that's what improv is right there.
But and then you guys would do cage match. You did blindfolded cage match once where you
did
the first half normally, and then the second half you called the timeout, blindfolded yourself, put bubble wrap on the edges of
that
the stage.
That was Dave's idea. That was brilliant.
So you knew when you were getting to the edge of the stage and did the rest of the show blindfolded.
Exactly, exactly. I think we have
and
one
that was
where
before
we...
Slow Waltz.
Was that before Slow Waltz?
It was not too long before, but
yeah, I think
you were
always,
just a Herald team.
Yeah,
you were just one of the Herald teams.
We had a little bending the envelope. Is that it? Do you bend the envelope?
I think you push it.
Push the envelope?
Yeah.
We bend it a little. We bend it. Actually, even before then, we did all the Herald teams had to do Immortal Kombat.
Yeah, right.
This is dating ourselves. That's when The Matrix was out.
Yeah.
And we all decided to be just Matrix people, like in black suits and glasses, and do Immortal Kombat as The Matrix.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was stupid. You know, let's wear costumes and have fun. Good times. I don't know.
So just something that just kind of built up gradually over time, like.
Yeah, yeah. I think at the time you're not thinking about, wow, this is great stuff. You're just like, let's do the next big thing. Because it's really, you know, when you first discover improv and it's like, let's try this. Oh my God, this is awesome. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. Then there was a moment in that during the run when it really came down to like five of us, you know. It was me and Sean, Secunda, Delaney, and Blumenfeld.
Yeah. You guys are the ones who were there at every single show.
Yeah. And that's when it got to that point of, wow.
Did Daly go out to L.A.? Andy Daly went out to L.A.? Or
he was like the first one to make it go to Mad TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then everybody else died in hunting accidents and stuff like
that's absolutely correct. Everyone died in those hunting
accidents. Well documented.
Yeah. Yeah. I had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. You guys sort of became the core of the team. Those five you mentioned were the ones that were there pretty much every year.
And there was like, you know, that's the time I remember. I mean, out of the whole span of the swarm, I remember that time of realizing, oh, suggestion is opening this form and rediscovering the form each time you do it.
Yeah.
And that was exciting. That was good times. Now I just sit back and talk about it. Back in the day, now I'm seeing, what's that old man? Swarm what? What's that? I don't know. You mean a movie with Michael Caine? The Swarm?
Right. So the development of the form, Slow Waltz around Rage Mountain, you worked a lot with Kevin Mulaney on that, right?
Yeah.
So what was
initially it was first half monoscene, second half the Atomic Herald.
That's yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love talking to you, Billy, because you always we're going to get into this next, which is all the different forms and names of forms that you like to throw.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So,
I'll do a form. I'll make a form up right now if you want, whatever you want.
Yeah, out of the podcast?
We can do a podcast form.
Yeah. We all go into different rooms and record scenes and play them at the same time and hope it works as a herald.
Done. That's my form, though. I made that up.
So yeah, the initial slow waltz I remember was first half monoscene, second half like a faster montage.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Rapid fire. We'd always have little, can you see this on the podcast? Can you see me do this?
You're doing the David Byrne once in a lifetime.
Yeah, for some reason,
it never was.
That's not what it meant to us. It just meant rapid fire.
Okay.
Just like rapid fire. We do the monoscene to slow it down. The debate is, do you do the monoscene first, then the rapid fire?
Yeah.
You do it the other way around.
Right.
And there's good reasons for both. I really enjoyed the mono scenes. I think we felt after doing them a certain amount of time, my feeling is they got not stale, but maybe we're starting to do the same things over again.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some of the same entrances and the
Which
same...
Which ones do you remember? I remember there was one, wasn't there one in a hot air balloon? No, on a mountaintop. There was one that was, they started to happen in places that would be very inconvenient to have characters enter and exit.
That's the Secunda style. You would like to do what, I remember having arguments we could have... Do an entire mono scene on, not even in a water, on top of an hot air balloon, on top of it. It's like, yes, we could, but why? you are right. We could have a scene there.
The two that I always remember are, there was one in an airport.
Yes.
Or I remember you came out with, I forget who it was, it might have been Dave Blumenfeld, and you two were baggage handlers just throwing suitcases at each other.
Yeah.
And the other one that I remember that I think a lot of people remember is the backyards one.
Oh, yeah.
The hedge form.
Yeah.
The hedge form. That was we developed the form as we went along. I think that was part of the Atomic Herald part.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
Because that wasn't a model scene. Yeah.
Secunda, there was a scene in a backyard, and Secunda leaned over the hedge. I think almost just as a joke.
Uh-huh.
And then either he or somebody made the move to go to his backyard and see his scene, and just shift it over.
Yeah, yeah. And then
you guys just kept doing it until you got back to the original scene.
Yeah, yeah. That was one of those, as you're doing it, you're going, this is cool, right? this is awesome. I guess. And then we just started doing rapid fire because it seemed to be more fun. It seemed to go, you don't know where the scene's going to go. You don't know what form you're going to do, whereas a mono scene seems very set.
Structured,
you know what you're
going
to do. I think you can only do, I think there's only 37 good mono scenes out there. And after that, you're done.
Well, the reason I was asking before about what it was like to have training outside of UCB, and this is a huge generalization and assumption, but because it might not be because of outside training, it might just be the players that you were. But what I remember at the Swarm when it was like really working, and like when everybody was going to see the show, was it was very physical. There was like a lot of like initiations where people would just establish the physicality of a scene first and then find a game, which I think is actually hard to do in a way, or it's different at least. It takes a certain faith that we'll be able, 10 lines in, we will be able to find it then.
Yeah.
Because I find that a lot of groups either they get physical, but then they can't find a game because so much of their energy is devoted on doing the theatricality. But the Swarm was like a matter of course. Delaney and Blumenfeld would step out and be slow dancing.
Oh, yeah.
And then there'd be like an orchestra, and that would sort of be funny. But the scene would take a little bit longer to settle in. That was pretty common Swarm setup.
Yeah, I think that goes back to Amy saying, show, don't tell. I mean, that was every other note was like, show me that. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it, but show it. And that means don't just show it by doing it, but show it by acting out. And when you have people like Delaney and Blumenfeld that can do that.
Yeah,
so
I mean, Blumenfeld
physical.
Was some of my favorite physical object work ever.
My favorite scene with Dave was, I don't know if it was a Herald or something like that, but it just started with for the classic looking through the blinds.
Sure,
That's a Delaney move, looking through the blinds.
Right.
And it's like, they're here. And I just turned to him and said, they're here. And he went and he just started grabbing guns and cocking them. And like for 3 to 5 minutes, we just grabbed a bunch of guns and just cocked them and set them around the house and put grenades around there. And then they edited, and that was all it was. And I'm in the middle of the scene, but I'm also just watching Dave and his eyes, you know.
Yeah, it's like, awesome psycho eyes.
We often said as the group kept getting smaller and smaller, eventually it would just be Dave Blumenfeld cleaning a rifle on stage, an improv rifle.
Lots of great murders in Swarm sets. Lots of you on skis with a rifle taking sights and shooting somebody. Let's get into some of the forms and stuff you would teach.
Yeah.
When we were around, I feel like one of the things that groups would want was the Billy like energizing factor. Mm-hmm. Like if a group was feeling down on itself or stuck in a rut, they'd get you to coach them.
Hey, fella, you guys feeling down?
You just had a big, generous laugh and lots of like fun exercises that would just, a group would enjoy it. I feel like, I mean, my original group was Monkey Dick. You coached us when we were just
a train wreck.
Yeah, that's right. Only 5 years and then it fell apart. But you coached us when we were a practice group and we had a lot of different coaches, but you would recharge us. And I don't think it was unique to us.
You guys did. You were so great at doing the organic that I learned how to teach organic from you guys.
Yeah.
I taught it wrong, but I learned it from you guys. just watching that energy and watching that play, that sense of play.
I mean, I know you do more in your classes and workshops than what I'm about to say. But like one of the things that people would associate with you, John, I think you'll find this, you'll agree with this.
Right.
Is like weird heralds that you would get from some of those old Mulaney exercises.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, and just like you said, like making up forms.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd be, I don't know if it's because you retired or because you just wanted to have something fun, but I know there'd be practices where it'd be like, I do a musical herald, now do a French door herald,
now do
a genre herald.
I remember
but they
being
were like
in
super
a...
energizing.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this
well,
is
the
fun.
Idea is you have to do every single herald. You know what, and that's kind of what we're going after in the Smokes right now, which is so exciting. Even at my age, it's very exciting. is you have to be able to do every possible herald you know possible, you can think of. Just do every kind of herald or form that you can do so that you can get to the point where you get a suggestion and it's like, boom, this feels like a musical and you can do it.
Right.
Because you can't just do it for the first time ever. You have to practice every single style and way.
So that you can get to the point where the suggestion can inform the entire piece.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm doing a bit of that now with this new opening where it's like the group I'm coaching. I only coach one group now, just one.
Okay.
But 5 days a week. they're learning 10 different openings. They've learned them from beginning to end, how to do that opening. So now when they start their
this
opening.
Bangarang? Is
Bangarang. Yeah. Bangarang.
So the they'll LA do a, Herald team.
All right, yeah. Easy.
Sorry, I'm just trying to annotate for our
right.
listeners.
Yep.
So they'll start with pattern game as a begin as a pedestal, and then from there they're launch into one other opening, go into another opening, another opening, another opening, until basically taking what they need. This opening needs a little invocation. This opening needs more organic work or more dialogue or something like that, until they build to a point where that's what this Herald is about. Now take that idea with just the opening and do it with Heralds themselves. Do this form, that form.
Yeah.
And then after a while you become a master. And also, I was pretty tired in class, and I just go, just do something where you run around. You guys are in an action movie. Do an action movie, Harold.
Well, I just remember it definitely was a side effect of having Billy coach was to be energized and full of confidence.
You know what? It comes from you just, in the improv world, this is for the kids listening right now. They get so hung up on the improv that you just see it in their eyes. You see them looking into their head. Yeah. When they're doing improv, because they're just so filled with game. Is this game? Is this that?
Yeah.
And does this rule go here? I can't do that. There can be no walk-ons in the first beat in this. You know, they're just so worried about every little thing that I find my job at 501 or whatever. What's advanced?
Advanced study, as we call it now.
Whatever.
We call the 501s okay. advanced study.
I call it the Jabba. I give my own name. I'm teaching a lot of them to break the rules that they set and realize just have fun.
Right.
You know, those rules are still there. Use those rules when you need them. But you need to like quit looking in like that zombie, that improv zombie look,
right.
and look out and look at each other and look for the fun, guys.
Yeah,
looking at you thank two right now.
We need to do it.
Yeah, I definitely need
we're
that.
We're uptight. We're
yeah,
up, there's no doubt about
uptight.
It.
I need to swallow all that stuff. But it is a matter of, like, as you're saying, you know those rules.
Yeah.
And then you have to just be able to know where it's appropriate to use
exactly.
them.
Exactly. Like, exactly. If you live your life by every single improv rule, you will never do a scene. You will never get through a scene whatsoever.
You'll be able to move.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your favorite rule to break on stage?
I feel there's so many jokes to say right now.
I don't know.
I
feel like your last bunch of Stepfather shows in New York before you moved to LA, I think you were a samurai in almost every other scene.
Oh, I'm
like
not allowed to be a samurai anymore. Yeah. That's a rule. That's a rule. That and Hawk edits.
Oh, yeah. Talk about the Hawk edit. No, talk about the Cube edit.
The Cube edit?
Yeah, do you remember that?
Yes, it's a brilliant move that nobody got. But after, you know what? Here's the deal. I started it. I just walked on stage. And I looked at them, and I...
This is the swarm,
Yeah, the swarm. I mimed that I held a small cube, and I put it in the middle of the stage, and I walked away, and they were looking at me. It's like, clearly, that cube sucks the whole scene into the cube, and I pick up the cube and walk away.
There's no way anybody could know that.
There's just something...
You know what, though? I talked about it backstage, and Dave went, oh...
That's something that the Swarm was doing a lot of, right? Was like these different kinds of editing,
absolutely.
Too. That's something that you guys were known for. Like the Samurai edits and the Hawk edits.
They're fun. Those
the Hawk
are my
edits work.
Those are my edits.
Those are.
I remember being very, like, I remember everybody was all a Twitter about that kind of stuff back then. And I remember the group that I was in at the time, outside of UCB. We went crazy with like, we gotta...
The Swarm ruined a lot of groups. You go see the Swarm, forget everything you were doing and just try to be the Swarm.
I remember Tom Schmidt wanted to do nothing but weird edits.
Start from edits, nothing but weird edits.
Yeah.
I tried that form, it doesn't work. I say that, but I still think there is something about finding a form through your edits from the inside out. Like your edits will define it, something like that.
Mm-hmm. There's something about like sometimes you get an idea and your scene follows the idea, but sometimes just being physical and active brings other ideas to your mind. It's absolutely true.
With Monkey Dick,
you did, I mean, before our very first cage match, which was our first non-class show on the UCB stage, we were petrified. I think John was on a Herald team and the rest of us weren't, Gemberling. You were our coach. And you brought us on the UCB stage, put the clock up on the wall, and made us do organic sound and movement edits in and out of the group games.
Yeah, the
scenes were weak, and you were like, you should do sound and movement in and out of the group games.
Yeah, yeah.
To kind of like re-bolster your confidence.
Absolutely, yeah.
I don't even know if you gave a reason. You were like, just do that. That's working.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, if your Herald ends early, just do sound and movement at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And our Herald did end like 6 minutes early. We just did a sound and movement thing for the last 6 minutes of the show.
Uh-huh. And we won.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
It was the establishment of Monkey Dick.
Yes, that's right.
And I think have you given a story of why you guys are called Monkey Dick? Did you tell that story?
I don't remember.
It comes from every team is given a horrible first training. Oh, am I touching my thing? Can you hear that?
No, it's good.
Sorry. Pardon the name, but Swarm was originally called Fag Dance until we got a real name.
Right.
The thing is, we're calling ourselves this, so that forces us to get a real name.
Yes.
And I remember telling you guys are Monkey Dick until you come up with a real name.
Yeah.
And you guys are so lazy. You're like,
right, we never, we like tried that. A couple times to change it, we never could. Yeah, we actually, just fought, John wanted to change it to Screaming for Screams.
That's kind of
like a Duran Duran group.
I don't have any idea what the logic was, but that's what he wanted the name to be.
You did a workshop with us with Badman a couple of days ago, which was great.
It was good times.
We all had a lot of fun. You were talking a lot about why and the why of the scene and like asking yourself why.
Yeah, inwardly ask yourself why. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? Mm-hmm. And then outwardly say it.
Why is that so important for an improviser to do?
Because I think that's your natural thought process. That's literally what you're doing in real life. Mm-hmm. When you walk from here to there, you're thinking, why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? Mm-hmm. Listen to your brain think. your brain thinks in patterns, right? It always thinks this, then that, then that, then that. Then you go, how did I get to here when I was thinking with that? So that's one thing. But the other thing is you're always asking, why do I think that?
Yeah.
And that gets you going in a pattern or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. It also gets you away from, in the improv world, of just doing. Sometimes we're doing too much on stage.
Right.
And it's just simply improv patter is like boom, boom, boom. Like this person speaks, this person speaks, this person speaks, this person speaks. That's not a real scene. People aren't doing that. People take breaks.
Yeah.
People walk over and get a sip of Diet Cola. You know, and then they come back and talk. Or they, you know, they do their little rituals and things like that. I'll teach in a class. Like when you're in a kitchen, do you always do something the same way? Then why not do that on stage? Find these times to think, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
Because we're so busy and just trying to pull off the improv scene, you're not allowing yourself to ask, why am I saying that? Why? Because you're thinking, why? Because you're thinking of, what's the next improv move? If that, then what else? How am I building that way? It's deep shit.
Let's talk about how many shows you started.
Shit. Oh, yeah, I was just going to get into that, too. Yeah.
There's a pile driver. Part of the Sunshine Gang.
Sunshine Gang, WPA Theater Project, same thing.
Sorry. Yeah. You started the Holiday Spectacular Student Show, which you did at least twice.
Dance party.
You did the Ninja performance show.
It was my last form before I left New York. Kind of like a fuck you, New York. I'm going to do what I want.
Third degree. You were the first coach of Curtis Gwynn and Peter.
I love that Pete form. Bosniak's. We were just thinking about that. Third degree. Was that an improvised courtroom drama?
Yeah, I think it gets mentioned on every podcast.
Yeah.
Is it really?
I think so.
It did. Yeah, it ran forever, and like everybody did it.
Yeah, right? I think we just talked about it with James and Jessica last week.
Really?
James Easton and Jessica were talking about it.
Glad it was remembered.
Time.
Yeah, it's definitely fondly remembered.
Yeah.
And you were the first coach or director of that.
Yeah, yeah. We just, we created a, were you in that?
No, I ended up being a swing player. We created some town,
Sebastian Bay, with a murder rate of 98%. So there's always a murder every week.
There were some great shows.
Yeah,
but fun. There were like dozens of shows.
Yeah, the 600 shows were just all about, you know.
Let's talk about the Holiday Spectacular.
Holiday Spectacular was all the, you know what, a lot of those techniques I learned from National Improv Theater, a lot of those movement techniques that you teach ESL students who can't speak English yet. to move together, like Dance Diamond, I think.
Dance Diamond, yeah, that was
something
a
like that.
Yeah, I remember doing that in class.
But also, I couldn't have done it without, I think Eliza Skinner was my musical director.
Right.
Because I had no idea how to teach improv music.
Right.
Also, Ernie Rocco Privatura.
Mm-hmm. Correct, right. On the keys.
On the keys.
And Jen Hammaker on the theremin.
On the theremin. If you can get that a theremin in any show.
That was the best. I remember walking into the theater in the middle of a Holiday Spectacular. It was insane.
Yeah. What was the show exactly?
I don't know. I don't remember.
You don't remember this?
It was not, well, John Ward was in it. The one I remember was with John Ward was Santa Claus, but he wasn't really.
Yeah.
And every one of these shows, it's a presentational show where you talk to the audience. And I insist that every one of these shows starts with, oh, hello, I didn't see you come in there. Because I just chuckle every time I hear that. So it makes me so happy to hear that. So he starts with that and he tells a story, gets a suggestion and tells a story how this particular holiday town, depending on the suggestion, if the suggestion is gift wrap, how gift wrap paper town almost didn't have Christmas.
Right,
and then
right.
Build it around that story.
All I know is there was singing, there was dancing, there was a theremin, there was John Ward dressed as Santa Claus.
Yeah.
It was on
kick
the
line. There's always a kick line.
Yeah, it was like it was like the most fun. It was just like pure. I was like, you didn't have to have anybody tell you. It's like, this must be a Billy show. Billy must be the behind this show.
That and the Ninja Show were both highly fit. Things I will never do on stage that I can make other people do.
Talk about the ninja form.
Oh,
this the spotlight?
That's a spotlight montage, I guess.
Yeah.
Or a hotspot. Hotspot.
Yeah.
The idea is there is no back wall. Everybody, the ninjas start by during the some music as the people are coming in, the ninjas kind of sneak into the audience and hide, and they get used to hiding all the time. So before everybody knows the show started, the ninjas are already all over the place. Then once the show starts, they get in the middle, ask for a suggestion, and do kind of it's like a hot spot opening, just get in the middle, get out. So it's, the stage is all black except for the center spot.
Yeah.
And that's only where the scenes can go, and the ninjas can lurch anywhere around there. There are no chairs. The ninjas play the chairs. They play the characters. They play anything.
Yeah.
But you have to get in and out of the stage like a ninja would.
Right.
And you have
to. Leaping in and somersaulting in.
Yeah. And the edits, it came from class about teaching edits.
Yeah.
Because you edit like a ninja. Kill a scene 7 seconds before it knows it's dead.
Right.
So you stop scenes in the middle. So the idea was like, kill this scene. When it feels like it's done, kill it like a ninja would kill it.
Yeah.
By stabbing the two people in the scene or whatever. But then also carrying them off stage just like a ninja.
Right.
Right.
And my favorite part, and I still to this day, Michael Martin did the show.
Yeah.
And I'd always say, announce the kill. Like if you have a sword, you go, katana! And stab him. But he would always come from the go, throwing star! And that became everybody. It was the most joyous death ever. It made me so happy. What other? And also the ninja's weakness is karaoke. So anytime anybody sings, they can no longer hide. They have to step in the middle stage and sing completely and then hide again.
This show is ridiculous.
It sounds like one of the things that goes into coming up with forms for you is just like finding and exploring what is fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes what is forgotten about.
And I get all this stuff. A lot of these forms I got from Walsh's first class, Robot TV.
Yeah.
It's like, let's develop the world of the robot. So in the ninja class.
By robots for robots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For the ninjas, like, let's develop the world of the ninja. What's the ninja's reality? Or in the holiday world, what's the reality there? So a lot of that stems way back there and just keep building off of it.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. What's the Garfunkel?
The Garfunkel? I don't know. You tell me.
Oh, come on, man. What is the Garfunkel?
I don't know anything about
I'm waiting for your class. A lot of your class descriptions include teaching the Garfunkel. What is the Garfunkel?
I'm just seeing if you're paying attention to what I write down. I think I actually had a class figure it out. It's a second Banana Herald. It's all about the also-ran guy. The guy that plot advances in Law and Order. The guy that just, no, it went that way.
Yeah.
You know, and
the
then just follow
characters.
That guy. Yeah, so it didn't work out. Hey, but you got to try. You got to try.
Yeah. So you were on the Swarm, and then you were on the Stepfathers as well. Mm-hmm. That was like the last big team that you were on. What are some of the differences between playing on the Swarm and playing on the Stepfather?
About 3 inches. I don't know what that means.
The Stepfathers also has changed a lot. I mean, like when you first run the Stepfathers,
it's much more fluid. Yeah, people are in and out.
Totally. Yeah.
What's the difference between the two?
What were your experiences?
Yeah,
sure. What were your experiences like with playing on the Stepfather? I'm not asking you to judge the membership.
He's right here. He's looking at
us. Yeah, I'm looking at Stepfather.
How difficult is it to improvise?
You know what I'm curious about? What was it like when the Stepfathers started? Because at that time, now the Swarm is a team that like the old folks like us talk about.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But when the Stepfathers started, the Swarm was still very much a part of the landscape.
That's what I'm...
Yeah,
everybody...
Yeah.
I mean, I think that was the hardest team beginning.
Every team
has to have
that.
Because you were just in the shadow of this mythologized team.
Yeah, that, you just polished up the question that I was trying to
ask. Yeah, I mean, it would sort of be like, I don't know. I mean, like, it'd be like, oh, you're going to be on Fawlty Towers with John Cleese, who just finished Monty Python sort of thing. Uh-huh. Like, not quite that lofty, but there was an element of, like, being in the shadow of the swarm.
I think, yeah, I mean, you don't know it at the time. You're expecting to get that tightness, but that tightness took 6 years to get.
Yeah.
You know, however long we were together. But we also had some good heavy hitters when we first started. I mean, Peter Gwynn and
Husky.
Christina Gahousis.
Sure, Gahousis. Chris
Gathard.
Yeah, Bobby Manahoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, it's just like how what we said earlier, how the Swarm started. We have individual players. We can entertain. We can do an entertaining show. We're not going to get that tightness, you know. But then after a few, you know, once we figured out the chemistry back and forth and we finally found the team, now you're going to find that tightness. You know? And I thought we got there. I thought we hit it just before I left. And
it was
you guys
fun
fell
to see
apart.
It become, once you left, it Shannon and I are trying hard to destroy the team in your absence.
Yeah,
I don't know what we can.
What happened? I don't know what happened. Actually, I loved the show last week that we did, that second half.
With the butterscotch slide.
To me, it was Zach just going across stage and his Leonardo thing.
Unicopter.
Birds.
Yeah.
It's just a pretty picture. You know?
Yeah. It only takes 1 week of Billy being back before you're all on a butterscotch slide with Leonardo da Vinci in a unicopter.
Yeah.
You were back for 1 week before that happened.
And not one hawk at it.
No, look, you have such restraint.
Yeah, you're really
so
matured.
Wait till tonight.
I thought of you once, like some time ago, I was trying to, Sean Connery once coached a Herald team and was like, you should sometimes channel players that you like. Mm-hmm. You should just sort of like try to summon their strength. Yeah, like not quite literally what would X person do, but almost just like try to feel their, what it's like to see them and see how that affects your play. And once in a Stepfather show, like some months ago, I thought about Billy Merritt and I stepped out and I was like, Falcon! Falcon, launch! And I tried to like launch a Falcon off my arm.
Yeah.
Didn't make any sense. Baffled myself and everybody.
Right.
Needed Shannon
well,
to
you
come
don't
in
say
and have it.
Falcon launch.
It didn't make any sense. It didn't make any sense. Look, I can't do it. I can't become.
Oh,
it was
that's
a.
Not true.
It was like a fly, half human version of Billy Merritt.
Yeah.
Trying to come out of my mouth.
Keep trying.
We'll all get there eventually.
Yeah. Well, Billy, thanks. I think we should maybe try to wrap this up. Do you have anything else you need to cover?
No. Mooncakes is a great restaurant.
Sure
it is. Right?
Yeah, you're plugging
also,
that restaurant.
Diet Coke is
the
drink of
choice. Diet
Coke's
a great drink. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is not a radio show, so you don't need to plug. You don't need to do.
These are my private sponsors.
Okay.
I thought there'd be a video here, so I'm wearing a shirt with all the patches.
Yeah, I was wondering why you were doing that.
Yeah, it's pretty.
It's kind of like NASCAR for improv. In LA, we all wear NASCAR type outfits with patches.
I see that. Yeah, it's a different scene. The priorities are different out there.
You should come out.
Okay, I'll
get some mustaches and come out.
I'll get some fake mustaches and I'll
do
be
I need
there.
A sponsor beforehand or do I just come out there?
It would help you. It would help you.
That's my problem. I
well,
can't
thank
get
you, Billy Merritt, for being on our show.
Thanks, Billy.
If you're
thank
out in LA,
you.
Go see the Smokes. Go see the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Come over to my house. Check out my big TV.
Yeah, come watch TV with Billy Merritt.
Huge TV.
Yeah.
What else do we have, John?
I think that's it.
Okay, well, that's the end of our podcast. Please.
Oh, fart balls.
Yep, another swear word from Billy, pushing the boundaries.
Is that really a swear? Fart balls. I mean, neither one of those.
Yeah, they're both timid words.
You can say both of them in prime time, I think.
You ever catch a fart ball in the mouth?
No.
No.
Okay, then you'll know.
Okay, well, all right, that makes it dirty then.
Hey!
Oh, that was great. Oh, yeah, now
professional comedian, Billy Merritt. Over 10 years of professional experience to that noise.
That's good stuff.
We'll come back next week for another episode of the UCB New York podcast.
Yay.
We'll have something awesome.
Yeah. We'll try to top this somehow.
We're going to do it.
We're going to interview an actual ninja.
How many cats do you have in here?
I just have 17 cats. So I stopped giving them names. All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Bye.